thank you ever so much for first off agreeing to meet with us. It's just this is terribly exciting for us.
Oh, it's exciting for me too.
Yeah,
to see a camera pointed at me is exciting.
Oh, this isn't real. This is just a stage prop. Don't worry about it.
Perfect.
We just drag this around to make people feel uncomfortable.
Wait, is this my good side?
Yeah, that's right. So, okay, so I got to ask first off. Another San Francisco State graduate. That's
yes.
Wonderful. You majored in English?
I actually began as a film major. So this love of telling stories began with a more visual way of telling the story. And I watched movies as a kid, day in and day out kind of thing. And it was my excuse.
What's the movie that you take to the deserted island?
Dear, that's a hard question.
The one movie.
The one movie?
You only get one.
Can we come back to that question?
Think right? About it. Think
interview.
About it.
You know, and so as a film major, I always had these ideas of stories, even as a kid, because I was always watching movies, thinking,
yeah,
I'm going to do that one day.
Yeah.
And then I got to San Francisco State, which had a very good film department
great
at that time.
Yeah.
Took my first film course and found it excruciatingly boring and very technical.
Okay, I got to go back here because you just hit the right square away. You hit the main topic, mm-hmm, storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what obviously we as a species are best and most noted for is storytelling.
Yeah.
When did you... What do you remember about storytelling as a kid?
I remember about storytelling.
Did you...
As growing up in a kind of traditional Asian household, I should say, we have this thing called, I think it was Maxine Hong Kingston who coined it, talk story. And we grew up hearing talk stories. You know, I'm of a generation of writers, too, I think, that was probably the first generation that actually sat down and started writing down talk stories that we had heard about. But, you know, my grandmother, my mother always told stories of their growing up in Asia and Hong Kong, of relatives, you know. So I heard this always growing up, and we had gone as children to visit my grandmother in Hong Kong a lot. So that all kind of, you know, osmosis kind of came in. But I think it was the talk stories, and my mother was a great reader.
Ooh.
Between the two, I think stories just kind of became embedded, you know, and who I was as a very young girl.
Do you remember any particular story that really set you going?
Well, you know, I mean, I would hear a lot about the customs, you know, the customs that were done in the Chinese culture.
Uh-huh.
And I think I was fascinated with a lot of them, about the snakes that were kept in wooden boxes, and men mainly would go in and they would take the gallbladder out,
right,
and put it into the teacup with tea, and it would help with virility,
right,
and all that kind of stuff. So it's those kind of little things, cultural things, that I think fascinated me very early on already.
Wow.
And I never thought that it would carry over to the books that I've written. But, you know, it's these things that are little seeds that are planted that kind of bloom at weird times in your life that you don't, unexpectedly.
Yeah.
And those are the best kinds of stories. But one of the stories I can tell you that became actually a book of mine was The Samurai's Garden.
Seriously?
And it was always about my mother's favorite brother,
yeah,
who wanted to be a painter. And
right,
in the Chinese culture, and you were a son, to be an artist was not an easy thing, to want to be an artist. And he wanted to go to Paris and all these other artistic adventures that he wanted to do. But he became ill. And at a very young age, he was around the age of Stephen in The Samurai's Garden. He was sent to my great-grandfather's beach house in Japan, in Tarumi.
Right.
And so I heard that story growing up. And because he was her favorite brother when she was a young girl, I remember I had finished my first book, Women of the Silk, and I was sitting there thinking, what am I going to write now? Do I have a second book in me?
Yeah.
You know, which is always the fear of writers, is that
right,
we all have that first book, but do we have the second book?
Yeah.
And I'm half Chinese and half Japanese. My mother was originally from Hong Kong, and my father was Japanese from Hawaii. Mm-hmm. So I didn't have a lot of Japanese culture growing up. I grew up in the Chinese culture. So, you know, hearing that story and knowing that he was in Japan and had this cross-cultural thing going on, and I thought, here is a chance for me as a writer to learn about my other half of my culture, what it means to be Japanese, you know, or am I in any way Japanese, having grown up in the San Francisco Bay Area.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, those are the gifts that are given to a writer, that you have this ability to live many different lives. You know, not only in your books, but to find out about yourself. And so I just went to the library, got all these books on Japan, and just began reading. And it was a very different experience from my first book, in which I had the Chinese culture, but I didn't have the story. In this book, I had the seed of the story that was given to me through my mom. But I didn't have the culture.
You
know? So it was a very different experience in writing it. But I, you know, that in terms of the talk story given to me became what would become the Samurai's Garden.
Yeah. Awesome. Incredible.
Yeah. You know, so sometimes you can blend, you know, fact with fiction and culture. And, you know, when you're done, you've discovered more of yourself. You've learned about this uncle, even though it was imagination. You know, I kind of resurrected him in a way, you know, that brought him back to life, not only for me, but for my mother.
We are alchemists.
We
really,
when it works,
when
we
it
hope.
Works.
When it doesn't blow up in our face, we hope.
Okay, so as a kid growing up here in California, did you write stories? Did you tell stories?
Yeah, you know, I mean, it goes back to the whole film, wanting to be a filmmaker again. I would write scenes, I remember. I would sit down, if I were inspired by a movie, I would sit down and try to write a scene of a movie that I would one day make, kind of thing. You know, and it was easy and it was simple because it was scenes and it was a lot of dialogue and it was just setting the scene and then giving characters dialogue to speak. And as I remember, that and trying to write small short stories were the beginnings of my writing career. And I would probably say it was probably between the ages of 10 and 16 that I did a lot of that.
Did you keep any of them? Do you still have them?
If I did, they're buried somewhere. You know, I think I was thinking, a question that came to me was, what are some of the highlights of your life having been a writer? Well, the three highlights that came to mind, I think, immediately when this person had asked at a bookstore was the day I first took the first hardcover out of the envelope that was sent to me.
Oh.
The very first book of Women of the Silk. I couldn't believe it. That feeling of, it's in my hands. I have a book in my hands.
It's yours.
And my name's on it.
That
was it. My name's on this book.
Right.
The second was, I remembered, it was a reading at Black Oak Books in Berkeley.
Yeah.
It's no longer here, I'm very sad to say, but at the time it was a big bookstore, and if you've done reasonably well, they asked you to read there. And I remembered going in and being ushered into the back room, which is what they do, you know, and then you come out. And I was thinking in my head, oh, please, please let there be someone in the audience. You know what I mean? It's like the second book. And it was the very early stages of The Samurai's Garden. And I thought, I don't even know if there's going to be an audience there. And let there be the amount of fingers on my hands and be in the audience, you know. And I walked out and I was very happy to see that there was, because I was home, this hometown. So there was an audience. And then I looked in the front row. And in the front row sat my AP English high school teacher, my AP history teacher, his wife, who was a substitute teacher, and the dean of my high school.
That's neat.
And I will never forget that moment for as long as I live, because I think that was the moment where I thought, I guess I've done something right, because now the shoe's on the other foot kind of feeling, you know. You know, and the third was, I remember my brother saying to me, "Yeah, well, you got a book published, but you haven't really made it until you're in Costco."
in Costco with your books. I love it.
And the day that I was in Costco, I said, I don't know why this should matter, but because, you know, you're hearing your brothers say, you know, teasingly, but you know how brothers and sisters are. It's like, when you get in Costco, I'll say you really made it.
One of the writers we interviewed, when she got into this, said it was, she was in a bookstore, and she watched this woman reach down and pick up her book. And she said, suddenly, all I want to do is run over, hug her, and say, it's yours for free. You don't have to buy it.
I'll pay for it. Here's my credit card.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that's exactly it. You know, I mean, there's some disbelief, you know, especially when you're first, you know, becoming a writer, or your first two books are out there, that people actually want to read what you've written.
I mean, you've spent years in a cave, in the dark, with no one around you, not a clue about whether or not you even got your verbs and subjects coordinated.
Usually I don't. Usually you hope for a really good editor.
Right? And all of a sudden, there it is. Yeah. That's exciting. Do you still fantasize making films?
Always.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's like one of those first dreams you want to, you know, and as you said, it is a way to tell a story.
Well, it's really fascinating you should tell us, because when I read The Sunrise Garden, I was watching a movie, and I couldn't quite figure out, because your descriptions were very visual to me.
There you go. So it probably has a lot to do with the fact that, you know, I spent so many years visually seeing stories.
Yeah.
You know, that, and I'm also writing about cultures where, if you haven't lived in them, I always feel that I have to define them enough that the reader will feel that they're there.
Yes.
You know, and so that in my way, I think that has a lot to do with the visuality of the books that I write.
Yeah.
You know, that I feel that if I can make the reader understand where they're at, if I can make the reader understand who these characters are, then I've done my job to a large extent. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, certainly I have these daydreams of, you know, it would be lovely to see The Sunrise Garden up there on in film, you know, or any of the other books, but I don't, you know, it's...
Spielberg, are you out there in the audience?
it would be, as they say, icing on the cake, you know, I mean, you know, it's, writing is a difficult profession. It's, you know, to have been published in the first place is always still quite amazing to me, and so to think beyond that is kind of hard. But yeah, it would be that kind of coming full circle, that fulfillment of starting out wanting to have been a filmmaker, you know, transferring to writing, which is a different way of telling stories, and the way that I think used my particular talents best is actually sitting down and putting the words on the page. I love the actual doing of that, of getting a sentence right. You know, of saying, of knowing it, of feeling it inside you.
Do you get into a zone when you're writing? I mean, like, it's like meditation.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's meditation. It allows you not to see a shrink. It saves a lot of money in that way. All writers are a bit schizophrenic because we have all these voices in our heads. So, you know, in this way, it allows us to stay sane. You know, I always feel that by telling the stories, we're you know, getting these voices out of our heads and onto the page. No, I mean, I've never felt that if I read a book while I was writing that somehow I would plagiarize that particular book. It actually works opposite for me.
Uh-huh.
I always felt inspired by, you know, certain books that I had read, and I tend to go back and read them, you know, or look at them again when I'm working to see how they do particular things. You know, that were inspiring the first round through, the first read through. And so I do that. So I'll reread books. Or if I'm reading a book that in particular that's inspiring at the time, a new book, I do that also. You know, and I'll read a bit. That's actually the writing process for me, is by beginning by looking at a book that I'm reading. I mean, reading a page, reading a chapter. Sometimes hours will go by and I think, I have not written a thing, but I've read half this book.
right.
You know, I feel that it's all process of writing. You know, I mean, sometimes, you know, sometimes I don't need to read. Sometimes I just jump right in. I'm already working on pages that I had written the day before.
Yeah.
You know, so it's always this one step forward, two steps back kind of process for me.
Do you find a difference in your writing if you're writing in the day or the morning versus late at night?
Different.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, I do feel there is. And what I feel is when I'm on a deadline, those night hours, those you know, 11 to 2 or 3, there's this quietness during that period of time that you can't find the other times of day. I mean, I think that's why when friends of mine write early in the morning, they find that kind of quiet before the day starts.
Yeah.
I find it after the day is done kind of feeling.
Yeah.
I, you know, I don't worry about anybody calling. There's no noises other than the creaking of the house or, you know, a cat, stray cat, you know, running around. But there's this kind of quiet that allows you to kind of fall into what you need to do as opposed to the daylight hours for me that don't get me into that same kind of zone as easily. I tend to write with music on, another thing. And sometimes, I mean, friends would say to me, well, wait, how can you write with music? Is it, I mean, certainly it's just classical, right? You know, no actually lyrics and singing. And no, sometimes I do have, and it's what it does is it kind of blends out all the other noise.
They're different parts of the brain.
Yeah. And I think I just have that one of those brains that, you know, it doesn't bother me. It actually works as a buffer.
Yeah.
So I'm very fortunate to have that. So, you know, I turn on the music, I take out the book, you know, I start reading a bit, and then somehow all the people are sitting on my shoulders, you know, the editors, the book clubs, the agents, the, you know, what are you writing next, people, kind of fall away.
Yeah.
You know, and then
but
I'm
what
just,
about your characters?
Well, those are the people I hope will actually come and sit on my shoulders.
And do you converse with them? Are you in charge of them, or are they just hanging on for the ride? Or?
Well, you know, in the beginning, I'm in charge.
Okay.
What I hope is to lose that.
Yeah.
I hope that if the book is working well, if the story is you know, moving along in the right direction, the characters start moving in the directions that they want to move in, that they have to move in.
Yeah.
Then I know I'm actually writing well.
That it's working. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, it's always the most difficult to begin a book. Because it's before you really know the characters well enough to know the direction they're going to move.
So have you outlined the whole thing?
No, I don't outline it
good
at all. what I didn't tell you is I began as a film major. I quickly realized that this was probably not going to be my profession. But I did take a script writing course, and I felt almost immediately that it was closer to what I wanted to do. And I moved over to the writing department, and fortunately, again, San Francisco State had a wonderful writing department at that time. And it was only one of the few universities that actually had creative writing within their English program.
That's right.
I mean, now all the universities have creative writing departments, but back then it was rare to have one. And I remember moving over to the writing department, and I was taking this course called Writers on Writing, and it was when writers came to speak of their process. And the first professor and writer who came was a poet, and her name was Kathleen Frazier. And I fell immediately in love with poetry, and I actually did all my undergrad and graduate work in poetry.
Yes.
And what it gave me was this wonderful foundation with language. And what I've always
the
kept to...
The music of language.
Yeah, the music, the spareness of it, what you could do in a small space, as opposed to pages. You know, can you write that in a page or in a paragraph? And it's definitely transferred over and become, I think for me, the foundation of my particular writing. Is the lyricism in it, and certainly a spareness, I think.
When you have finished writing something, do you ever read it out loud?
I sometimes read dialogue out loud. You know, I mean, I have a lot of writer friends who read out loud always. You know, they'll finish writing something and read. I'm more of an internal reader.
Yeah.
I do read it, but internally.
Yeah.
And then at times, I feel that if I finish a chapter, now I need to hear it.
Yeah.
Then I'll read it out loud.
Yeah.
And I have this weird thing of writing half a book and then going back to the beginning and feeling like I need to read it as if I were a reader, not the writer, to see if I'm if it's working.
Yeah.
You know, and so I've done that pretty much with every book.
Neat.
You know, and that's probably my little thing of needing to do that, you know. Or it's just realizing that I don't want to spend another 2 years writing the rest of the book if this is not working.
Got it. Right, right. Okay, you've had plenty of time now to cogitate in the background here. What's the movie?
Oh, what's the movie? Oh, here we go.
You're
going to
take me to Desert Island.
Desert Island.
Book.
Oh, that's even harder. I don't know. I mean, when a book or a set of
No, you can't cheat.
Oh. Well, if I think back to books that I've loved, I mean, I did love Willa Cather's My Antonia.
Why? What is so brilliant and beautiful? I have tried to figure that out.
I think that's why we write, is the fact that we keep trying to figure out when books work the way they work.
Yeah.
How we can somehow replicate it. You know, I mean, it doesn't become the same book, but it is somehow defined by a particular book.
Do you know that?
Reading Jane Austen also.
Yeah.
And I remembered everybody loved Pride and Prejudice, which I did too, but I always loved Persuasion.
Mm.
Just a tiny bit more. And that's always been my favorite of her books. A movie that I think really influenced me. I mean, it was the movie that I saw and said, this is what I want to do. I want to make movies, I remember, was Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
Oh. Yes!
For some reason, that particular movie, it had everything, you know, a little bit of action, beautiful people, it was
music,
set back in time, the music was glorious, humor of it. I remember that being a big influence.
Yeah.
I mean, so different from my work and my stories, but a great story that had everything I thought made a good movie.
Brilliant.
You know, so that definitely would be a consideration on that desert island.
Yeah, good. Plus it's entertaining.
Plus it's entertaining.
Which is the power of stories.
Yeah.
What do you tell a promising young writer to do?
What do I tell a promising writer to do? I say, always be truthful to whatever that story is and to themselves. As writers,
yeah.
I think it's very important in this day and age that you stay true to who you are and what you're doing.
Yeah.
I have this line, and I'm sure you've heard it, that you have to lie to tell the truth, kind of thing. And to be passionate about the subject matter that you're writing about, because you have to live with that for several years.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, to be honest, it's whether you're writing as a living or you're writing while you're making a living, it takes years to produce a book. And it's very much like a marriage. You know, and there's moments where you're going to want to divorce that book.
Yeah.
You know, and so there has to be a certain amount of inner passion involved. You know, and if there isn't, if you're writing for the wrong reasons, it's not going to be there.
Yeah.
And, you know, and so I tell them to be very certain about those things.
Yeah.
You know, and then to keep, if it's something you really want to do, if you really need to tell this story, that you keep doing it. You know, I mean, even if it's a line a day, you know, but you just keep at it.
Now, you've worked with students across several decades, and do you sense a different, I didn't say centuries, I said decades.
Dorian Gray, here we come.
Right. Where's the painting, Gail? Do you sense a difference in how stories are told or read or perceived with younger people now, given Facebook and texting and these short, infinitesimally small units of information that
Oh, the tweets.
Tweets.
Yeah.
Oh.
Tweets. Oh, yeah. I think I teach a class sometimes in the first page, on the first page.
Oh.
And I think it's incredibly important to write a good first page. and for so many reasons that you had just spoken about.
The best of times.
Yeah, we exactly. We no longer in the days of Dickens and Thomas Hardy. Right. We can't spend 100 pages describing the moors or, you know, the town of whatever. But you do have to have, you do have to set scene.
Right.
And you have to do it well. And there are ways to do it in terms of using language and, you know, in small spaces. This is a good thing. And I talk about the fact that there isn't that kind of mindset that will spend a long time now, you know, reading, getting into a character. Right. They want things to happen, you know, bang, bang, bang.
Right there.
And it's good and it's bad,
yeah.
You know, because what it does is it robs us of a lot of good literature that can be written because it's no longer written in the same way.
Right.
On the other hand, if you do it right, there are some amazing opening pages that will grab you immediately. And, you know, and so I read certain openings that I've loved to show them this is what you can do. You take a little time, but it doesn't take a lot of space. And yet you can convey the same thing.
Beautiful.
And it's our responsibility as writers, I think, not to let go of the fact that we need to tell a good story, that we don't take shortcuts. If it means that we lose some younger readers because they don't have the patience now, well, hopefully we'll get them back when they hit 30 and have sense. You know, it will take that time.
Right.
You know, but I do think it's twofold. I mean, I've been very fortunate because they've taught a few of my books in high school and freshman college level. And I'm very grateful to English teachers. That's a huge thing. I do a lot of talks at high schools, and I do, and for the California Teachers of English Association, you know, and I always do it because those are my people, you know. Those are our people in the sense that if they didn't have a list for us to read when we were in high school, we may not be here doing what we're doing now.
That's right.
You know, we might not have been inspired. I remember when I read The Grapes of Wrath.
Oh.
I can never forget when they made that dollar and were able to buy a pound of hamburger.
Yes.
Meat. Yes. You know, I mean, things like that stay with
I
you for the rest
that is
of your life.
America's greatest novel.
Yeah, that's actually one of the books that I might consider taking on that. It is a book that has stayed with me to this day. And I, you know, it's because of these English teachers that do that.
Yes.
They make a list of books that they think will capture these kids. Of course, it won't capture every kid because we're all different. But it will capture you and it'll capture me and it'll let us go on into life carrying these books with us.
Yeah.
You know, so I've been fortunate that Samurai's Garden and Women of Silk are the two books that are often taught. And, you know, I have this theory that they choose to read for summer reading Samurai's Garden because it's one of the smaller books. You know, but at the same time, hopefully they've gained something out of it.
At the same time, so was Cannery Row.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Mice and Men, you know, we can go through, you know, and so, you know, it's all the idea that if you start kids reading at certain ages, they will stick with a book. This is what I'm praying and hoping, that there's still readers. There will always be readers, you know, no matter how in what form they read. But if they read in high school, if they start reading there and they have a book in their hand, we have to believe and hope that they will carry on with that, you know, through their growing up and when they have children.
We've covered the main things. We're really interested. You're just wonderful. You're just this font of knowledge.
Yeah, a font of knowledge. Get it. Make sure that goes in there. Font of knowledge.
Of knowledge.
that'll be my title of my talk. Font of knowledge.
That's some, is there anything you can think of you'd like just to babble about or to share?
To share.
The storyteller is on now. Watch this.
The storyteller is on. You want me to tell you a story?
Yeah, would you?
Oh, no, I don't. You know, I mean, now I'm at the phase of my life where I'm thinking of what I want to pass on, you know, in the sense of here I have, in terms of legacies kind of things. I mean, I have these books. That should be my legacy, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, there was that part, when I was young, I always wanted to join the Peace Corps.
Me too.
And my mom always said, no, you can't because, I don't know, somebody's going to kidnap you in Africa. You know, she was like, you kind of got like, she put the fear of all that, in, you know, in me. So I just have started this thing with other groups in which we're doing a nonprofit called Waterbridge Outreach Books Plus Water. And we're trying to get books into developing countries who don't have that. And it's been... You know, I mean, and what I'm trying to do is, the hard part is this. It's something I'm loving, right? And I've gotten other, I have writers for Waterbridge, and we've gotten, and Mary is one of them, and we're trying to get other writers in to be, to bring people to our thing. And what we do is we find foundations that are already on the ground, and we work with them to bring books over to study centers, to schools, to, you know, in developing countries. And so we're in India and Haiti, and we're just about to start Tanzania. But what the hard part is this. Once you start doing something like that, it makes it very difficult to sit down and write books.
Oh, that detail.
Yeah, you know, I mean, to make a living, to be a writer, you know. Yeah. And so it's trying to balance both things, you know, that makes it difficult. But it's like two different loves.
Yeah.
Or maybe the same love. It's just trying to make it mesh.
Yeah.
You know, but it's been terrific to be able to do something so different and yet kind of come full circle to where, when I was young, wanted to do something like this. As I was just saying, that's where it begins.
Right.
You know, if you can get a book into a hand, it could change that child's life.
And change the world.
Exactly. And that's what we hope for.
Yeah.
To go back in terms of books that I think inspired me when I was young, I remember reading Mary Renault.
Oh,
The Persian Boy. And those kind of books. And
historical. Thomas B. Costain was one.
Yeah, and I think it was the first time that I realized, and, you know, I mean, because now I kind of write I write historically in the sense that it's usually set back in time a bit. And I remember it was the first time reading her books that I realized she didn't live in that time, but look, she's really resurrecting that entire time and the people who lived there. You can do that as a writer.
The textures.
You know, the research that went. And it was the first time that I really became aware of it.
Yeah.
You could do that. I remember being a teenager reading her, and she was one of the ones who influenced me in that way. In terms of dialogue, I remember reading Iris Murdoch.
Yeah.
She had this great way of dialogue, and Raymond Carver. You know, so it's just like growing up, I was influenced by a lot of different authors.
That
taught me different things in terms of...
Were you the nerdy kid reading in the corner?
I was a quiet kid,
yeah.
If you could ever believe that. I remember my family always saying, she never said a word when she was a kid. And I really do believe it wasn't until that I started writing that I actually began to speak more.
Yeah.
It was like I was holding everything in. And for some reason, when the floodgates opened, now you can't shut me up. You know, kind of feeling. But it had to do a lot of becoming a writer and actually writing that allowed me, I think, to be more vocal in so many ways.
Can we say just in general that you're proud to be a writer?
You know, proud's hard. Asians don't say proud. They're proud of themselves. I think I'm very lucky to be a writer.
Nice.
I think fate's been very kind in that sense, because I know so many good writers who have a hard time even finding an agent.
Yeah.
So to have actually been published, to actually be able to do it every day.
To be recognized in Safeway.
To be recognized in Safeway, holding a package of whatever in your hands. I should have said Trader Joe's. It would have given me more cachet.
It's cooler.
Yeah.
Cooler.
To be recognized at Trader Joe's.
Yes.
You know, I think all of it is more astounding to me. To this day, I still feel that feeling of how did this happen more than... You know, how lucky I am, rather than anything else. You know, and in any moment, things can be taken away in the sense that, you know, the way the publishing world is today. how do you know your next book will be published? You know, so you just have to keep doing the one thing you're good at, know, or you can hope that you can keep doing it kind of feeling. You know, and if not, I also have to think still how lucky I am that I have these 7 books out there.
Yeah.
You know, that people will still read me, I hope. You know, and that hopefully, regardless if I'm being published or not, that I'll still be writing stories.
When we began this process of going around meeting writers, Werner Herzog's movie Cave of Forgotten Dreams had just come out.
Nice title.
Yeah, and it's about his being given access to this caves in France, southern France, with the discovery of new cave paintings. And the very first time that they were seen, and the camera on him, he's talking about these artists, and I'm listening to him saying, Werner, you're missing it. These were storytellers. They were telling stories about
they were putting their history down.
And that guy or woman who was making that painting on that cave was thinking just as all storytellers and writers have thought, I am doing something that's going to last. It's a story that has importance and meaning and will transmit on.
Yeah.
The fact that it went on 30,000 years beats the hell out of the rest of us. But
and now their stories are being told, regardless of all the time that's gone by. You know, and I think also it's just that, you know this, regardless of anybody's reading, you still need to tell your story.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Even in the dark with no one listening.
Exactly. That's what lives on one way or another, you know.
Yeah.
That's why we're here and that's what we do.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? Oh, so cool. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
This has been wonderful.
I don't know if you're going to you better make that.
No. But it is surprising because all the bad things that Mary said about you don't seem to be true at all.
Let's call her right now.
And we are at end of tape.
Good.
Thank you so much, Cheryl. Thank you. You're brilliant.
Oh, brilliant. My brilliant career.
Yeah. Oh, that's my favorite movies.
That's a good movie.
I love it.